Welcome to the podcast. I am photographer Sid Caesar.
You just blew all the levels that you did because you yelled into the microphone. This is designer Dave Say. We're just getting warmed up again after a maybe
hiatus.
six month hiatus.
July, I think, was
July.
Yeah.
What day is it?
Today's Monday, November 23rd. Three days before Thanksgiving.
That's right. Turkey Day. Gobble, gobble. I can never make that noise. It's unlike that robot in that Disney movie.
You're like a horror turkey there.
You know, there. What was the name of that robot in that movie that we saw? Because I can't remember anything.
What movie?
You know, the Disney movie in San Francisco or Tokyo.
Oh, Big Hero 6.
Big Hero 6. He goes,
Nebe, Nebe, Nebe. Oh, right, yeah. That's my turkey sound.
Yes,
that's embarrassing.
Yeah. So.
Hi.
What do you have to say for yourself?
What's going on? How have things been since July?
Since July?
Once I was listening to the last one to sort of catch us up, and at the very beginning of the one we did in July, I was complaining about how it was hot, and I was like, seems like we were just complaining that it was cold, and now we're complaining that it's hot, and here we are in November, and it's just starting to cold again. So it's just a never-ending cycle.
I mean, it's always too hot or too cold in here, but I guess you won't be in here that much longer, I guess.
Sorry
to segue into that.
Yeah, I know. And it was really hot this summer because the Broad Street Parkway, they're building a parkway right outside this building.
Yep.
And there's been construction outside the front here all summer long.
Dust.
And there's been, I had the windows closed most of the summer because just there was like a layer of dirt in here that was just really gross. There's still layers of dirt over a lot of things in here.
Mm.
So I had to keep the windows closed. And of course, it got really hot. But we don't have to deal with the hot for much longer because they're selling our building. The Picker building is going to be sold.
Is there like official news about it now?
There's no official date. We have been told we have until May or June, the summer of next year of 2016.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Still really stressful.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Because I'm not quite sure what's going on at this point. So we found out Clock Tower Apartments, which is the building right in front of us. They actually are buying this building, and they're going to basically just gut it and turn it into more apartments.
Yeah.
So we have roughly until next summer to pack up all our things and leave and find new spaces. So it's been heavily stressed about where and what and when. There's been a core group of tenants, mostly the creative types in this building, that have sort of been going off looking at buildings as a group.
Yep.
And so we've looked at some buildings. It seems like somebody signed us up for a tour of the crappiest buildings in Nashua, because all the buildings we look at have just been like basically shells that are falling apart. Really discouraging. Another thing that's kind of discouraging is most of the real estate owners that we've talked to when we mention what's been going on, like the first thing out of their mouths are they don't want to deal with artists.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting. The Hippo was just here the other day, and they're going to be doing an article. And one of the things I was talking about is, you know, there's sort of three things going on right now. There's what am I going to do? And then two is there's what are the other tenants of the building going to do? And then the third thing, which is sort of a larger grand scale thing, is whenever anybody talks about the arts in Nashua, like City Hall or anybody, our building is the place that they point to all the time, and they say, look, this is the art hub of Nashua, and like when we see the Picker building, like we see the beginnings of like the Button Factory in Portsmouth, or you know, like Lowell, Massachusetts, they've got a giant arts scene down there, and they say, you know, the Picker building is the start of what could be, you know, Nashua's Lowell, like the equivalent of Lowell could start right here.
Yeah.
And that's not going to be anymore. And so it'll just be interesting to see what happens as far as what are the artists in this building going to do? Are they just basically going to blow away to the wind? You know, like Sarah and I, like our, you know, obviously my dream is to have a house, or our dream is to have a house. And, you know, like it would be really nice to just be able to find something where I could just build a studio right in the back of the house, be it just a piece of land. I mean, all I need is basically a rectangle that's this size.
Yeah, that's right.
So could I find something like that? And then, you know, like I know because of zoning, it's not going to be in Nashua. So it's going to have to be outside, you know, a ways away, or I don't know. So it's just, we're just trying to figure out what's, you know, what's going to happen and that kind of stuff. And it's sort of motivating us to sort of meet with a financial planner and talk about, like, you know, if we have what it takes to get a house and what kind of a house could we afford and all that kind of stuff. But it's just really, it's stressful. you know, I mean, we knew this was going to happen. The owner of this building is older now, and I'm sure, you know, like whatever they're waving in front of him as far as money is like, I don't blame him. So we knew it was going to happen, but of course, nobody's ever prepared for when that actually happens. And so we're all just a little stressed out and everything. And yeah, you know, it's just like change is good, but it's just, I don't adapt to change very well.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah. And most people aren't looking for change all the time. So it's not, I guess not expected.
Right.
Yeah. Well, so you're going through this, but perhaps, as you say, opportunities will fall out of its butt.
Right. And the more I think, I mean, you know, like, as I think about it, a majority of the clients that I've had have not been based out of Nashua. Either they come to me from, you know, all around, they drive to my studio, or I go to them in Boston or wherever.
Yeah.
So I think I don't have to be in Nashua.
Yeah, you just need really a place to hold your stuff and to, right, like maybe, you know, like a ready room. It may be some occasional, you know, like experimentation.
Yeah, yeah. And it, like, you know, it doesn't even have, like, this space that we're in currently, it is 50 feet long by 17 feet wide. And if I had a second bedroom in a house, that could be where all the computer stuff could go. So yeah, the studio itself could actually be a little bit shorter if need be. Like, I think I could get by with 35 feet maybe.
Yeah, you, you still want some working distance.
I need that length. That's the biggest thing. And so I don't know anything about zoning as far as like building a 50 by 17 foot rectangle. And I don't know if people can, you know, like if that would fall into a garage territory or like an outbuilding type thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I need to figure out how all that junk works.
Yeah. 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 What is the history of the Button Factory anyway? Who started that thing?
I don't know. So it'll be interesting, one, to figure out what I'm going to do. But I think overall, on a grander scale, just what this building closing down means to the arts scene that is in Nashua, that's been sort of trying to find its feet for a really long time.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens. I mean, it's, you know, one of the things that I talked about with the hippo person is the one, like they keep talking about how, you know, you've got people that are supportive of the arts in Nashua and all that kind of stuff. And I think the one person who doesn't get any recognition, who actually doesn't want recognition, but kind of should be recognized a little bit, is the owner of this building, because he's the only guy in this town who's consecutively housed four floors of creative talent at a reasonable price for like 15 or more years. And so it's like, you know, it's like part of that is like, just give him a little recognition. Like, you know, a lot of people keep saying, well, why did he could raise prices on all the tenants if he wanted to. And he points to all these other mill buildings and he's like, all these other mill buildings are half empty. And he's like, I'm filled and I have a waiting list. He's like, so if I'd rather have a filled building than have an empty building that's just not doing anything. So I don't know. So I, like a lot of people that have come through this building that were tenants and not tenants anymore have had problems. And, you know, like there's lots of times where he's taken them to court and everything. But I don't know. I think he deserves a little recognition that he's going to be selling this building and he's going to retire. And he's sort of been responsible for a lot of the arts in Nashua, or the reason why the arts are wherever they are, for whatever that means.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. I don't know.
Well, I hope something gets figured out.
Yes, we'll have to see what happens. Hopefully it won't take us another 10 months to do another podcast.
Yeah.
And so that's what's been going on with the Picker building. It's just bleh.
Yeah.
All kinds of stuff. You just got back from Taiwan.
Yeah. After, let's see, my dad was visiting in June, and, you know, the recap, I was originally going to have some dental work done here, and I was mentioning this to Dad. And one second, I'm screwing up the levels are all off again.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Test. Okay, that's a little bit. And so, you know, it's like about $3,000 or $4,000 to get this kind of work done. So, like, basically, one of my teeth rotted out at the roots and was infected, so I had to get it extracted. And then the preparation for replacing the tooth is either you get dentures.
Yep.
Or you get something called a bridge, which I guess builds a fake tooth between two strong teeth.
Okay.
And then the third option is having an implant in which they basically insert the socket for a new artificial tooth in your jaw. So okay. It's kind of like, you know, screwing a wood screw in.
Yeah,
and then, yeah. So that's why it's like a wood insert. So they had to they dig out the infection and then they replace it with grafting material, like just so the bone regrows there. Mm-hmm. So they get the, I guess they have sterilized cadaver bone they stuff in your jaw. And then that grows back in like about 3 months or 4 months. And
so they need the time for the bone to fuse with other bones?
Yep, exactly. So it's like repairing like a bad hinge on a door. Like if the wood's rotted out, you have to like actually like rebuild that part or put a new piece of wood in.
Yep.
Or, so the screws have something to hold on to.
Yep.
So that was, you know... So instead of getting it done here, my dad was saying, like, your uncle's a dentist, and he's the importer for Bicon, which is a dental implant manufacturer, I think, from Germany or based in the United States based on a German patent or something like that.
Yep.
And so he's been doing this for a long time. So you should come to Taiwan. Take that money that you were going to spend, you know, here and then have uncle do it. And, you know, that's, you know, reallocate that money that way and then come visit the family.
So and visit the family.
Yeah. So that was the plan. And I was really nervous about it because, you know, going to Taiwan, I don't speak Chinese or Taiwanese, can't read the signs there, and I just associate it with a lot of childhood trauma from you know, just not being able to communicate with anybody and, you know, just feeling stupid all the time.
Right.
You know, but this time I thought, well, maybe I can get by it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't bad.
How long had it been since the last time you were there?
2009, I think.
Okay.
This is probably the first time I actually went there on purpose.
Okay.
Because prior, it would be like some sort of, you know, like a funeral or something like that, or a wedding. Like, so this is the first time I've just went just to see what it was like.
Okay.
And because, you know, dad's getting old and I want to be able to spend more time with him.
Yep.
And, you know, Taiwan is actually kind of cool. It's become more interesting to me these past few years.
Had it changed a lot since 2009, since the last time you were there? Were you in the same area?
I was visiting the same area where my dad lives in Taichung, which is sort of like north of the middle of the island.
Okay.
The whole island is like 240 miles long by 80 miles wide.
And so how many people live there?
So they sound like 22 million people.
Whoa.
The density is crazy. It's not as bad as Hong Kong, but it's like way, way up there.
So is everything vertically stacked?
Yeah, a lot of it is. One thing that was new there was there's this whole west section of Taichung that was built in the past, I think, 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's now all these luxury hotels and things like this. You know, so it's, you know, I didn't get to visit Taipei this time, which is the capital.
Yeah.
But they're probably way built out now, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is the first time I've seen, you know, this part of Taiwan actually look like it was like more of an international city. You know,
that's
not really.
Yeah.
But no, it's huge. I mean, it's like there's a lot of things going on in Taiwan that, you know, make, you know, lots of towns in the United States look really backwards. it's kind of nuts. It's always kind of been that way in some sense.
Yeah.
But it's even more so now. Huh. I mean, like it's. Yeah, we have a nice quiet like way of life here, but it's I was actually there on Halloween and there was like some kind of, I guess, Saturday jazz festival going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was just like tons of people. It's like the Nashville Stroll here, but it's just it's just like Saturday. Saturday night in Taichung. It's just people just all over the place, not honking their horns or yelling at anybody or getting into road rage too, which was kind of weird. It's quiet. And then someone pointed out, well, that's just the Boston area. That's no one else is like that. It's hawking at each other all the time. So I don't know. I'm still processing it. I was writing a blog series on it. I'm about halfway through the number of days I was there. The day's 15.
Yep.
I finally bought an iPhone, used it as my camera throughout there.
Yeah.
And the idea was to get a data plan so I could like explore the area, but never got a data plan there.
Oh.
And it turned out that one of my relatives, like, was actually in the hospital too. So that kind of put a damper on some of the planned activities.
Yep.
So I'm going to go back sometime in probably the spring, you know, the April, end of April or something like that. Yeah, after PAX East, probably. if I can, because I already bought the ticket. Yep. You better go to this time.
Oh yeah, well we bought the tickets now, so.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. So Yeah, that was the Taiwan trip. I'll probably have more to talk about it, like, after I finish writing these blog posts about it. Right now, I'm just still getting caught up with just the routine. You know, it's gone for, like, you know,
a month, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so So it kind of...
Cats are good?
Cats are good. Like, yeah. The couple of weeks before I left, I found out that one of my cats was diabetic, so it needed insulin shots twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so fortunately, one of the veterinary techs at the place I was taking him to, which Hollis Vet, they were able to accommodate that. You know, still cost them like daily money,
right.
And it probably wiped out the savings I would have had from going and getting like the dentist work done, you know, for free in Taiwan.
Right.
But like, he's doing okay. He's up to 3 units of insulin, and he seems to be stabilizing. I'm taking him in next week to get another blood test.
Yeah,
well, he seems all right.
Yeah, I know it took a while, like because Gromit used to be diabetic for a real long time.
Yeah,
I know initially it took a while to just keep bringing her in to test her blood to make sure her levels were good and she was getting the proper dosages and stuff like that.
Yeah. So largely I've just been concentrating on work and trying to get back into the balance of doing my own projects and doing contract work with my cousin Ben out in California.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like our contracts, we're getting a few more of them in now. So
good.
That's taking care of, I guess, the next couple of years of stuff.
Yeah.
Doing work that's relatively interesting. Developing like video game like technologies and browsers and stuff like that for educational purposes.
Is it weird knowing that, like, how do you what am I trying to say? Because like I'm thinking of somebody that like month to month I'm not quite sure what's coming in as far as money or business. When you say something like you've got a contract that's going to last for a few years and financially that should carry you through, like, do you see that as a good thing? Is that kind of a bad thing? Like, I imagine it would be the opposite of me where I'm stressed out about money a lot.
Yeah.
Does it make you comfortable? But at the same time, are you like, I already know for the next 2 years what I'm going to be doing?
Well,
I guess I don't know what I'm trying to.
Well, I guess there's that question of, like, how much security do you have financially?
Yeah.
Knowing that there's this work that's available that I'm signing up for, it, you know, alleviates some of that.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it does take away from my own project work. It removes the urgency of working on that, which is something I want to correct for next year. And I also have a tendency to prioritize contract work over my own research and my own explorations, and that ends up, you end up being stagnant, and then those contracts dry up. You have nothing to fall back on. You when you could have been developing new product, new ways of doing things to make you more competitive in the market.
Yep.
And that's what really bothers me. On the other hand, it's, you know, working by myself on those projects is not particularly motivating either. So having this external project work with someone that I like working with, doing interesting work that has like some meaning in a larger educational sense, you know, that feels good. It's not like I'm I would not have been very excited by this if it had been marketing related stuff. Helping someone who doesn't know anything about their product say something about their product, trick people into buying it, which is kind of how I see a lot of marketing work. A lot of idiots trying to sell people. Oops, I can't say that. I'm going to bleep that out. But I feel very strongly about, you know, not doing, you know, that kind of work anymore.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, there's pros and cons. Just maintaining my sense of priority and getting both work done is, you know, really the major balancing point. I've been like dealing a lot with it this year in that I didn't get a lot of the things done that I wanted to. I wanted to expand the number of products I have for sale on Amazon.
Yeah.
And also I've let my web presence slip quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't been blogging about things I'm interested in.
Right.
And, you know, that's as, you know, I have a considerable amount of Google juice as far as like productivity tools go.
Yeah.
But I haven't been maintaining, I guess, a fresh presence. And so that means there's been a slow degradation in, you know, what influence or what people I'm reaching.
Yep.
And I think what's really the most important to me is like, who am I reaching and who am I communicating with on a regular basis?
Yep.
Because as a freelancer, you know, I'm not, you know, talking to a whole lot of people, and that's a kind of death.
Yes.
You know, so these are all the things that I'm kind of concerned about, you know, at the moment. But to do this with some sense of, I guess, enthusiasm is kind of where I'm trying to go with it.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel about it. Like, you don't, you work with some photographers in the area, but you don't, you're not working on any like big projects like for like let's make something cool. Or...
Yeah, I've been this year. I mean, last few years, like there's I've got ideas about personal work that I want to do. I just haven't been able to do it. And then I don't know. Like I'm just in a I'm not in a very good place right now. And then this junk with the building and trying to figure out what's going on with that. And then I've had some problems recently with some intellectual property stuff and that's really got me bummed out. And even with some of my work, like hopefully my clients aren't listening to this, but I've just felt like I've kind of gone through the motions just with the work I've been doing. And I'm just trying to figure out, I'm trying to find that inspiration to just get back into doing my some personal projects. And I don't know, I'm just kind of in a funky place right now. And the winter never helps. And I know that that's going to make it even worse because I just become a lump in the winter. And just, but the other part, too, is like I'm not very, even that I've been in this building, which is an arts community, I still sort of stick to myself.
Yep.
But there's still people that are here. Like you're a short drive from the studio and you can come over whenever you want. And I'm wondering what happens if, say for instance, like what if we get a place out in like Concord or Pembroke or something like that.
Yeah.
And I have a studio built out in the backyard. I'm just wondering what that isolation is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like it's funny cause I like to be around people and I like to talk to people and I think I get along with people pretty well, but at the same time, I'm very introverted. And I sort of just like to stay to myself. And so I'm just trying to figure out what's going to, you know, how is that going to affect me if we find a place? And I think it'll be okay. But, I mean, one of the reasons why I think it'll be okay is because hopefully we'll actually have like a home that we're like people can come to. And it's like, you know, if you want to come and hang out for the whole day, there's an actual house and we've got a kitchen and like we can go in and have a meal. And, so I think it'll be all right. But I don't know. And I don't know how to get myself out of this sort of hole that I feel like I've fallen into. And and it seems like across the board, like I've been doing stuff with Dead Pixel and then there's some personal stuff going on with the owner of that site.
Yep.
And so everything's been really quiet and like I got really excited about doing that stuff and then it just sort of felt like it fizzled.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's, you know, like it's still there. It's just waiting for sort of everything to start back up again. But that kind of was just like just kind of bummed me out and I don't know. Yeah. I'm just bitching at this point.
Well, you know, you might be an empath. Someone who is very sensitive to how other people are feeling around them.
Yeah.
I had that realization myself. Like say so like is it possible that that I'm yeah, like when usually we hear the term empath, you're thinking of like science fiction, like with
control my mind. Yes.
Minds, who's the worst empath? Deanna Troy, Next Generation. Like who? I never really liked.
I can so kill like, you oh, with my so, brain.
Yeah, no. Well, she was like just always like you know like she could feel what was happening, and I was like, no, just shoot them. Come on.
Yeah.
But. I had to think of, like when I get stressed about stuff, it's because I am putting other people's feelings or I am absorbing other people's feelings. And then it occurred to me like this whole like trip to Taiwan actually was what reminded me of this.
Yeah.
Was that I like because I couldn't speak Chinese or understand Chinese, I actually learned to read people emotionally to figure out what they were saying. And so I actually got really sensitive to it.
Right.
That's where I go to. And it actually is in some sense a skill. Because I can pick up on where people are coming from. It's good at the negotiation table because I can hear when they're saying one thing and they're feeling another thing.
Right,
it helps me in management situations.
Yeah.
But the downside of it is like when I'm feeling someone that's feeling bad, I feel bad too.
Yeah.
I feel really bad.
Yeah.
If someone else is feeling badly toward me, I really, really, really feel that. And it brings me way, way, way down.
Right.
And so I've had to learn to isolate it.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the coping strategies is like, well, everyone's an idiot. That's the first thing. But that's also not a very nice thing to say. And I don't really believe it.
Right.
I believe that people have their beliefs and they don't align with mine necessarily.
Yeah.
And I believe that there are multiple perspectives that we can be open to.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are not. That's probably where a lot of like the disconnect happens between various parties.
Right, right.
They can still have those beliefs that don't agree with yours, and you can still respect them for having those beliefs. Yep. And that's kind of where I tried to go to.
Yeah.
But getting back to the whole empathy thing or the empath thing, an empath being someone who is sensitive to feelings, and I'm not talking about like the science fiction reading people's minds directly. Yeah. I mean, it's just like the way that I process things. I'm not thinking rationally first. I'm thinking, is this person upset?
Right.
Is this person upset at me? And then some people would say like, all right, they're upset at me. Well, oh well. Yeah. But for me, it's like, that's a really concerning thing. I'm very sensitive to that for whatever reason. Yeah. And it affects my actions afterwards. Yeah. And it affects my ability to act afterwards. And so there's a number of ways you can cope with it. One of them is to take a breath and realize that you're processing the feelings probably a lot more than they are, and then you just go do something else.
Yeah.
You learn to accept it.
Yeah.
Or like a lot of people, they isolate themselves, or they develop those. They learn to shut it out.
Right.
They learn to turn it off. So those are some interesting some insights that maybe they may also apply to you, because I think you're also like very sensitive to how people feel. You want people to feel good. You make them laugh. So maybe there's some coping strategies there that you can work with, or just now that I realize that this is possibly an issue. If I'm feeling myself feeling down, I'm able to now rationalize it. To an extent, like, this person's upset with me, that's not my fault. Yeah. I can say,
yeah,
I'm feeling it, but I don't have to just mindlessly react to it. So this person's upset, let me find out what they're upset about.
Yeah.
Let me see if there's something I can do about it, and then I can get by on that.
Yeah.
And then some people just want stuff from you that they have no business wanting.
Yeah.
Or they're just trying to get something free out of
yep.
you.
Yep.
And, those people, you can say, well, you know what, I don't like the way that you're the way, and so I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to take it personally.
Yep.
So I don't know and it reminds you of anything that you're going through, but what you were talking about reminded me of it. It just happened here. Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what were we talking about? Oh, yeah. The funk.
The funk.
So, I've been. I think if you get a place like out in Concord or whatever like this, and I recognize the excitement about having your own place and being able to do things with it.
Yeah.
The hard part is going to get people to show up.
Yeah.
That's always the problem.
Yeah.
And to get people to show up, you need to have something that they want to come to.
Right.
Or they're so much lonelier than you are, they show up every day, you can't get rid of them. it's not going to go away. Even if after you go through the work of getting a place for yourself, it's at the age we're at now, without the extended networks of school or the workplace,
right.
We have to actually work and create it ourselves.
Yep.
There's no way around it.
Yep.
You could find a community in Concord because they have all that interesting stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
But that means going out and meeting people.
Yep.
That you might not necessarily like.
Right.
But again, it only takes finding one or two people that you get along with, and then that's the basis of something to build something.
Yep.
And creatively, that might be what you're looking for too.
Yeah.
I think as independent, creative, introverted people, we like to have control over who we work with and what we work on when we want to.
Yeah.
And then we find ourselves not having the motivation to actually go and do those things for whatever reason. Because we're feeling bad or we're missing something.
Yeah.
But there's just no one pushing you on it.
Right. Right.
So you're just launching into some things, saying, all right, this is going to be maybe messy and I'll discover what happens. That might be the thing that you just do.
Right.
You just commit to it.
Yeah.
And you see what happens. Say it's going to be a week or 2 weeks or a day or something like that. Go volunteer for something.
Mm-hmm.
And you say okay, I'm not getting money out of this or the money's not good, but it's a new experience and I'm getting out of the house.
Yep.
And I should be paying someone to take me off my own hands and give me something to do, because at this point it's something valuable. I mean, if you're at home just reading junk mail or watching TV, what's really the loss there?
Right.
If you could be working with someone else who you don't know that well, or maybe you don't like, but at least you're doing something.
Yep.
So
yep.
That would be my advice to myself and also a suggestion for you to consider. I mean, we could be working on stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know why we haven't even been doing these podcasts. Well, I guess it's been noisy, and then we've been
busy the construction.
And stuff like this.
You've been gone, so, but we did some cool. I mean, we did like you helped out with this Michael Ballar video.
Oh yeah, that was cool. Yeah,
so we did that. That's this summer. Michael Ballar, who provides the intro and the outro music for our podcast, has been working on some solo stuff, and so he came for a few days during the summer. And we recorded some video of him performing two songs, and one of them he finally put up on YouTube a little while ago, and we'll have a link. And it was good, and I was very happy with it, and I think it looks really nice.
Yeah. It was a real privilege to watch him, like, go through his process. Even though he was, like, kind of,
He was very hard on himself.
He was stressed out about it. Right? Like, it's like, I realize it was like when you're watching that movie with, I'm bad with names today, The Big Lebowski.
Yep.
And, like, at first, you think like the dude is like all relaxed and stuff, but he's stressed out the entire movie.
The whole movie,
he's stressed out, and it's like and he's like, "Oh yeah, that's cool, man. Yeah, yeah." But you know, so Michael Ballar is kind of like he has that kind of he likes to be loose. He likes to be like kind of like he doesn't like to be like give the impression of super serious. But man, is he super serious about his music?
Oh yeah.
So yeah, that was that was educational.
Yeah,
I mean, like, I see the same things in ourselves as well.
Yep. So it was good. It was good to watch him, and I'm happy with the way that came out. I love his little. He's sort of developed this. He uses both of his. He's got these two stomp boxes that he's created, and one is sort of like the bass drum, and then one is like it's just like a cigarette box that has all these little loose metal things in it, so it makes this kind of jingly kind of thing. But we'll throw the link to the video up, and you'll see it. It was really well done. I like Michael. I think he's a really good guy.
Yeah.
He makes really good music. I think he's going to be working on a solo album.
Yep.
So I'm hoping that.
Yeah,
I like him.
We need to reach out to people.
He's
one of those people that I think you contacted him at when you saw him at
Studio 99.
Yeah, and it's
just it's good because like he'll just call just to talk.
You know?
So it's like we developed a nice friendship over it.
Right.
And when we drove down to Atlanta, he told us there was this place we had to stop at and had biscuits at. And we did, and they were amazing.
Amazing biscuits.
So it's good. And then even like our friend Ian Ethan.
Yep.
The same thing. Like we just. We've developed a friendship over the years and stuff like that. And a big congratulations to Ian Ethan, because while he was out recently touring out west, he actually signed with a small record label.
Nice.
A place called Candy Rat Records. They are actually re-releasing his most recent CD that came out a couple months ago. And then I just found out the other night that he's actually going to, in February, him and his wife, Steph, they're packing up and moving to California.
California. Didn't you used to live there?
Yeah, he's a big cross country skier guy. He was like some super cross country award, medal winning. So they're going out to the Truckley area. I think that's what he
Truckley
said. Something like that. Some big ski and snow area.
Yeah. Huh.
And then his wife, who's been working as a graphic designer, she's actually going to quit her job and become his full time. She does all his mixing, his sound mixing, and stuff like that. So she's going to be doing that full time.
Yeah.
And what led to him signing is. One of the videos that we did, somebody put on Facebook, and it's up over 6 million views now. Like, it went viral, and all these famous musicians saw it, and they were leaving comments and sharing it and everything, and I think that led to him signing with this label.
Yeah.
So, all of a sudden now, I haven't really had a chance to talk to him because he's just been nonstop since the signing and everything, but now it's, he's supposedly going to be touring in more continents and just, like, all over the place. Very exciting. Crazy exciting. Yeah. So I he's just ready to jump in, and
he's such a nice person too.
He is, and I've been trying to figure out a time just to meet with him to have lunch to talk about some things, and he's like we could Skype. I'm not free forever.
Right. Yeah.
So hopefully I'll get a chance to touch base with him before he moves. So if he's listening, congratulations and record labels and touring and he's getting there. He is getting there.
Yeah. Yeah.
What
would the equivalent be for people like us to do what Ian is doing? How would you describe what Ian's path? Because you've known him for long enough before when he was just getting started with the Double Neck stuff.
Yeah,
and
he's just been hustling.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's just hustling, and he spends money that he doesn't have because he just believes in what he's doing.
Yeah.
And it's starting to pay off. The right ears and the right eyes are starting to see what he's doing and sharing it and everything like that.
Believing in what we're doing,
right? And you got to just do it because you don't know who eventually is going to come across your stuff and see it and talk about it and share it. And,
yeah, yeah,
You don't know what it's going to lead to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good. I love having creative friends. Just watching them, you know, it's so different than, you know, like people that clock in 9 to 5 and they just, I just love watching them express themselves the only way they know how. And then when they finally start to get recognition for it,
you know?
And it's one of those things where it's, you know, it's literally, it takes years and years and years to become an overnight sensation.
I recently read that book by Amanda Palmer.
Yeah.
About, what was it called? The Art of Asking.
The Art of Asking.
Yeah. And it turned out to be a much different book than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. It had been making the rounds maybe a year or a year and a half ago. People were talking about it, about how you just asking for things is a powerful move. It's not like a bigger move, it's a powerful move. But so I never really read it because I thought, like, it's just going to tell me to ask people more for stuff.
Right.
I already know that. I just don't like doing it. But it ended up being a really interesting artistic process book, and it describes, like, how she got started. So before she was a musician, she worked in, she's from the Boston area.
Yep.
And she was working as one of those living statues in, I forget, was Harvard Square or Central Square, like around in Cambridge somewhere.
Yeah, and you just stand there, right? And
they just stand there.
You have a pot or whatever that people can put money into.
And the interesting thing about that was, you know, I'd always imagined those living statues being kind of like, you know, antisocial.
Right.
But the way that she described it was like this act of giving and intimacy. Because, like, in the moment of you engaging with the living statue, and she would, I guess, present a flower to the person.
Yeah, if they gave you money, she would, like,
and so, like, I was like, oh, they're just buskers. You know, they're just like, they're just giving you a flower so they can get a dollar, right?
Yeah.
But no, like, the way she described it, she would pour, like, her entire being into that transaction and then, like, actually see that person.
Hmm.
And that's it was a really, really, really powerful way of describing it. And then from that, when she went in to become a musician. And the funny thing is, I've never heard any of her music still. I guess they were some sort of punk rock act.
Dressed
with the Dresden Dolls. I guess she just started making music because she just really wanted to. She didn't really care if it was good or not. Or, you know, she thought it was good. But she also knew she was like an angsty, like, you know, young person filled with rage.
Right.
And, you know, the way that she developed her fan base was through this continual act of giving and sharing and stuff like this, and like living with other artists and like pulling them together to do these projects. And, you know, so someone's a cinematographer, someone works at a paper company,
mm-hmm.
someone brings a whole bunch of paper and they make all these things out of it, and they hold this huge party and stuff like that. The kind of community that I think that we kind of want, but, you know, maybe this loud.
right.
But that same spirit of sharing and communicating and you really being, you know, authentic about it. That's what I took away from it. I think it's worth reading. It's much more of an art book than it is a social media how to get money book or how to get people to do things.
Right. How to launch a successful Kickstarter.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so, and she talks about some of the, you know, so like Kickstarter feedback, that kickback from people getting like, hey, she's getting people to do stuff for free. She should pay money and stuff like this.
Yep.
Like, but yeah, it's, you know, I always never really gave it much credence because, you know, people just complain about everything.
Yeah.
They always have an opinion about what's right.
Welcome to the internet.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So it's given me some ideas for how to adjust like my practice of things. I mean, some of the best things that I've enjoyed when I'm doing my own work is when I have stuff to give people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always thought like it's maybe if I was a real business person, I'd figure out a way to not give people things and then still get money.
Yep.
But this has reaffirmed my faith that what I was doing before was the right way to do it.
Yep.
And that's, I think, what Ian was doing, too. I mean, he was driven. He had to express the stuff he was doing. He was enthusiastic about it. He was excited about it. It's infectious. Mm-hmm. And he's good at it.
Yeah.
And people love that.
Yep.
You know, so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else has been going on?
Let's see. Let me check my notes.
So we went to Brimfield a couple of months ago, the big giant flea market antique thing. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I finally found, I've been looking for a long time, I wanted to find a little old brass lens that would fit on our 4x5
camera. Oh, yes.
So after looking and looking and looking and looking, I finally found one. It's not, originally I was trying to find a Petzval lens, which is sort of like, it's the original versions of that thing that Lomography sent me, which has this crazy swirl and stuff.
Right, yeah.
So I found one. I don't believe it's that. What it is, it's called a rapid rectilinear lens.
Huh.
And it was made around the same time that they made the Petzval lenses. The thing about the rectilinear lenses is, what's the best way to explain it? So if you were taking pictures of like buildings, like if you were taking pictures street level of buildings,
yep.
Some lenses, everything's sort of curved concave, gets a little concavey. So the buildings, they aren't perfectly straight. They start yep. to kind of this particular lens, it's in the lens itself. It straightens everything out.
Oh, okay.
So which would be good because Sarah likes to do a lot of landscapes.
Right.
And at least this way, whatever she's taking pictures of would be straight and not like.
So is curvy. It like, it says pre-tilted relative to the focal plane?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know enough about the things. But we found it. It's this beautiful little brass thing. It's specifically for 4x5. Huh. It came with a little waterhouse stop. I think without a waterhouse stop inside it, I think the lens is like f6.3. And I think with the waterhouse stop, it was like a custom waterhouse stop. I think it's right around f11 or something like that. So we had it for a while, and I started looking at lens mounts, because in order to mount it on a 4x5 camera, you actually have to have this little square board that the lens screws into, and then the board itself mounts on the camera.
Mm.
And I kept looking at the ones on eBay, and they were sort of made out of this metal, and you know, they just felt kind of sterile and everything. I was like, man, it would be really nice if I could find a wooden board, because the lens is older, and it would be nice to... and then I remembered the guy that made the tables for you for your cafe, Daryl Robichard, has a studio downstairs in our building. So just for the hell of it, I went down, and I said, this is what I'm trying to do. I said, this is basically the rough size and everything. And he did a lot of back and forth and stuff, but he ended up making a little wooden lens mount for it, and he mounted the lens, and I've got it on the camera.
Nice.
I took some pictures, and I'll link to it, and it's just beautiful. He actually he went ahead and put some, not stain, but some stuff on it so that it's smooth.
Uh-huh.
And it looks beautiful. It just complements the lens really, really nicely.
That's really cool.
So I'll put a little link with a couple of pictures that I took of it and everything. So props to Daryl. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me he did it at a fantastic price.
Yep.
So if anybody's in the area and they need a lens mount for their lens board for their camera, Daryl's the man to go to. I told him, I was like, we'll set you up, make you the new lens board magician in the area.
Yeah, I need to post a catch up on the living room cafe project too, because I did get all the tables in, got them all mounted to the commercial table bases I bought.
Yep.
I think it's gonna work. The whole cafe thing is, I wasn't sure exactly how the layout's gonna be.
Yeah.
But we should be able to get like a good like 8 people in there working at the same time on something.
Good.
So that should be great.
Good. Look at that. Holy moly. Is that
45 minutes?
All right. Should we kill it, and then we'll just get together next week and continue what we were talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that. That way we've got stuff we can actually meet and talk about.
Yeah, there's plenty of stuff to talk about.
Yeah. Talk about movies that we've seen and games that we're playing, and I want to talk a little bit about Sarah's position at the Institute and how she's been doing more stuff with the alumni.
That's cool. Yeah, she's doing some cool stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. She actually got an email over the weekend from... somebody affiliated with the school, and then also from the president of the school, basically saying she's kicking ass
great.
With the alumni stuff, and they're really happy with what she's been doing.
That's fantastic.
So she was feeling very excited this weekend. Yeah. She was like, "Oh my god, people actually like what I'm doing!"
Yay!
And she's been busting her butt. Like I've been, because she's sort of it's a paid position now of the alumni stuff that she's doing.
Yeah,
which pretty much makes me sort of. Also the co-alumni person, so I have to go to the meetings and everything like that. So I've been sort of at all the events and everything, and we had an official kickoff event in October, and we had a guest speaker came in who was actually doing contemporary work that was based around Star Wars and stuff like that. In fact, he just did it. He was part of a group show out in California that was an official Star Wars thing, and J.J. Abrams was at the opening, and he got a picture with him and J.J. Abrams. Nice. And it was like this whole thing, and so I'll talk about all that kind of stuff, and I guess that'll do it for this week. So we will definitely be back next Monday. Until next Monday, I am photographer Sid Caesar.
I'm designer Dave Say,
and we'll see everybody later. It's good to be back. It's good to be talking.
Yeah.
Yes.
So 15 seconds.
Music provided by Michael Bellar and the Azaz Ensemble. You can visit him at michaelbellar.com, or you can click on the link down below in the comments section. Go listen to his stuff. Go watch his new video. Give him some love.
Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving. Eat lots of turkey. Stay in bed on Black Friday. Yeah, don't get up early and go into those lines. Stay home, veg out, watch TV, watch a good movie. Spend it with the people you love. People like Kenta Koga. Gotta sneak him in there. Kenta Koga. We'll see you all later. Have a good week.
Bye.
Ciao.